Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
All right, welcome to 51 Strokes. This is Caleb Presley. Kind of emergency episode here today. I'm recording on my iPhone. If it sounds a little dodgy, audio quality-wise, that's why. I'm back in Asheville, North Carolina, back home, and I don't have my podcasting. I didn't bring my Zoom. I forgot it in Florida. So I don't have really a good excuse, but the iPhone stuff, I think, sounds okay. Good enough. So I'm doing emergency podcast because today we did something together. All the strokers out there, we did this, what happened today, together. Today on, what's today's date? August the 11th, okay? It's going to come out probably the 12th. But on August the 11th, I, Caleb Presley, and you, insert name here, a stroker, a 51 Strokes true fan, we broke together the 90 barrier. We broke it, honestly, much faster than I thought we could, and we broke it with style. We had the score of 80 going into the 18th hole. So that's what today's episode is going to be about. I'm going to walk you through it, tell you what happened, how I think that I was able to break this threshold so quickly and so in such a major way. Kind of walk you through the details of everything that happened. So I'm absolutely so pumped right now. Like Stephen Che just texted me. Usually when Stephen Che texts, he texts me like something nice, like congratulations. He's really nice all the time. And that's one of the things that gets under my skin about him is that it's just like he doesn't know the right times to be nice and when's not a good time to be nice. And it almost comes across as disingenuous, or it just gets under my skin. Today he texted me congratulations and I was like, dude, Steven, you're my best friend. So I'm in a really good mood. But today's episode is brought to you by Five Iron Golf. They've been with us since the start. Since we had 51 strokes still remaining, since we went out and shot like a 121 or one, we were in the 120s at that point when they decided to come on board. And now that we're 86, they're still here. They want me to talk about, you know what it is by now, if you listen to 51 strokes, the best indoor golf facility in the country in a lot of major cities in New York City, Chicago, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Las Vegas, Washington, D.C., and Pittsburgh just landed in your cities as well. And today I want to let you know about the golf happy hour is back. So we had left and it's now is returned. Think about it as something that you used to have happen that stopped happening and is happening again. That's what's going on with our golf happy hour. Five Irons Golf Fall League season starts Monday, August 16th. So that's next Monday with leagues for everyone. New players, avid golfers, hacks, scratches, you name it. Teams of four, Monday, Tuesday nights, 7-week season, drink specials, giveaway prizes. If you're in any of the cities that they have one, you can get a squad or you can just sign up by yourself, free agent style. You make some new friends. So local champs will face off for a live stream national event to crown the national champions. If you DM 5-Iron on Instagram or Twitter, I think they're just at 5-Iron Golf on both, spell it out. You get $100 off your league team. Tell them but you have to tell them I sent you, Caleb sent you, and they'll take it from there. 51 Strokes sent you. And it really is. If listen to other episodes, I really go in on bragging on them because I love them. Today, I'm a little bit feeling narcissistic in my own world, want to brag on myself, but they really are the best. And you should take advantage of that deal and get in those leagues. They sound really fun. Okay, so here's what happened. So first of all, to go back for maybe people who weren't there or who are just tuning in today, but maybe haven't been tuning in. Basically, the golf dream of mine started last summer, about a year ago, a little bit over, about 13 months ago. First time I picked up a club, and I fell in love with the game immediately. And I decided, I think the next day, that I want to become a professional golf athlete in some respect. I wasn't exactly sure what that meant. I don't, still am not. But, you know, eventually before I die, want to play as a professional golfer. That was kind of the goal because I loved it so much. I loved everything about the game. And I said, I wanted this to be my job. Like, I want to wake up and be like, what do I have to do today? Oh, my job. What is it? Oh, golf. And that was the dream. And so I made that declaration. And then, just as just a abbreviated story, and you guys probably already know it, right away, I went way too hard. I went way too hard because I fell in love with the game. And I was like reading all these books about you know, Tiger Woods, of figuring out what did he do? What was his practice schedule? What do I have to do? And it's like, well, Tiger Woods played 9 hours a day, every day. So I was like, all right, if that's what it takes, this is during coronavirus too, last year when it was first popping off. So I was like, I have the time, I guess. And pretty much pulled every muscle, ligament, bone in my body within a week, within 10 days max. After 10 days of starting golf, I was out. I was wheelchair bound, knee brace, neck brace. I was hurt. And then by the time I really, and I had to go to actual like rehab for, I pulled all these muscles in my back. I played 100 holes in one weekend at Pinehurst. Like the second, it was like literally the first weekend of golf I ever played. Played 100 holes. And I tore everything in my back. I just drank through. I knew I was hurt and I just drank through, finished the holes, played 97 holes. And so basically, I was hurt, started doing rehab, couldn't really do much. I was putting all the time. And throughout the fall, all I really did was putt. And I was super busy with football season. And so it really landed me this January where I had already made this declaration about how I wanted to become a better golfer, how I want to be a pro golfer. But here I am, I was sitting 4 or 5 months out from saying it, and I hadn't really improved my game at all other than putting, which is an important part of the game. And I was like, wow, this is really make it or break it time. Is this real? Am I really doing this, or is this a facade? And I was doing this podcast and I was interviewing some of the top minds in golf. And it was hard because I didn't know what I was talking about. I was like, didn't even know what to ask them. I didn't know anything about golf. It's great to get some intro level knowledge, but some of these, you know, Mark Brody, the inventor of strokes gain, doesn't necessarily want to explain to you what an out of bounds shot is and the rule structure of golf. So the interviews kind of were hard to do because I just didn't feel like I was even knowledgeable enough to even conduct a conversation. Anyways, but I did do an interview with a guy who went for this dream before me. He was 28. He was in Oregon. He decided he wanted to quit his job then and become a scratch golfer. And after 5 years, I believe he got down to where he was a 6 handicap. But in the meantime, he tore his back up and he basically was in a situation where he had been playing every day and he just didn't, I don't know if he didn't have the strength to do it or what happened. I mean, just a lot of swings and he's all, you know, you're 28, you're not young. And he messed up his back and his doctor's like, you're either gonna have to get a spinal fusion or you gotta stop playing golf. And so he's like, all right, this is my run. I had a podcast with him and I said, what advice would you give to someone like me who's trying to do something similar? He said, if he could go back and do it again, the only thing he would have done different is he would have moved to one of these golf meccas, whether it be, you know, Southern Florida, Arizona, one of these places where the whole world, you can golf every day and the world is golf. And so, and he's like, you know what? If I would have done that, I think that would have given me a better chance. And he said, if you could do that, I think that's probably the only way you could ever accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. And so for me, it was really kind of like a shit or get off the pot moment. And I was like, all right, because I was living in New York City. I'm like, am I doing this for real? Am I actually serious about becoming a professional golfer with my life? And I know that it gets a little weird because it is the Barstool element, the content part of it, where it's like, you know, making content, doing my job at Barstool, that it was fortunate for me because I was able to have the ability to not have to quit my job like he did, but I could just kind of move and shift my job and still really the truth is do exactly the same thing I was doing, which is everything on the road anyways, with a couple of little golf videos mixed in. But I had the ability to move. So I decided in January that I was going to move to Florida. And I did. And I moved down to South Florida, Golf Mecca, where I could play every day. And so basically in January, now the dream came alive about a year ago, but in January, I really was able to start practicing playing golf. It's been, and you get started. I'm sure everyone is better than me probably who's listening to this, you know, or have been golfing longer. You get started playing golf. The hard part is just standing over the ball and feeling like you even going through that checklist of, all right, how far away am I? Okay. Do I have the knee bend? Is my back straight? Do I have one shoulder higher than the other? Okay. What am I going to do in this takeaway? How am I going to, and there's just, you're overloaded with information and I don't think matter what kind of instruction you get at that point, because I think it's good to have good instruction, of course. And I was lucky. I had some of my initial lessons with Chris Como, who's like the greatest golf coach on the planet right now. He's been with me since the beginning. I had some of my initial lessons with him, which really put me on the right track, I guess, of when I did go through that checklist, I was thinking about the right things at least. Now, I haven't had, but since then I've had maybe, you know, I've worked with him probably 3 times total. And I think out of everything, that's probably held my game back the most, is that I've been so scared. It's not him. I've just been so scared to work with someone else, knowing that they could quote unquote mess me up when I have the resource of Chris Como just when he's available, which is pretty much never because he's the number one golf coach in the world. So you can imagine he has other things going on. But it's been hard for me to like, I haven't really gotten any lessons. That's the truth. I've got a couple lessons with a guy named Colin Woods in New York City. He was the guy who was really helping me with the putting. He did help me with some of the initial swing stuff in January when I was still in New York. And then I got some lessons with Brian Ziegler, who's actually the caddy now for Bryson DeChambeau. He was under the tutelage of Chris Como, as was Colin Woods. So they were both in the same world. And so I got some lessons with Brian and I got some from Como. But I probably had 10 lessons total. And I'm afraid, and I still am, and this is still going to be a problem for me going forward, I'm afraid to get lessons from someone who's not directly under Como because I just don't want to like mess myself up, I guess, or like go down a path of learning something. He's just the number one guy in the world. It's like, he's kind of a resource for me. He's definitely there for me. He's not physically present all the time because he has other clients who are like in the PGA Tour and like quadrillionaires. So it's just, that's been a tough thing. But my point is basically, you know, I didn't have a ton of lessons at the beginning, but you go through a couple months where it's just good to stand over the ball and just like get used to taking a swing at it and going and kind of eliminating that checklist in your mind. You're still doing it, but it kind of becomes second nature. And you have to get a lot of golf in to do that. I had friends down in where I was staying in South Florida who were training they play in the NFL. I played with them at Carolina, playing football with them at Carolina. And then now they're in the NFL and they were training in South Florida. So I was getting to play with them a lot. I wouldn't go to the driving range that much, but I would play almost every day, but just play golf like 18 or whatever, 9. We're getting holes in, limited time on the range. And that's probably on me, but another part of that is when you're at those initial stages, and I'm still feel like I'm just breaking out of this just now, your body can only take so much twisting and turning before you start getting really sore and feeling pretty bad. And then your golf goes downhill because your back's hurting. And then you got to take weeks off or you got to take whatever. You can't get any practice in because you tweaked your back and now you're out for 3 weeks, which is that type of thing had happened to me too. So I understand now when I was like, why can't you ramp up this process of like, why can't I learn faster? Why can't I be at scratch in 1 year? And I think a lot of it, and people were telling me, you can't do it. It's impossible. And I was like, I don't get it. I think I get it more now is because you have to build up that strength and it takes a long time. Your body has to get used to making the golf swing. You have to get used to what it feels like to stand over a ball. You got to get used to going through that checklist without it becoming all you're thinking about. And you got to be able to quiet your mind a little bit. And I'm still not at all these points. And I'm speaking on a high horse. Like, besides today, which was a great round, my best round ever, 86, my lowest other than that's a 95. We're going to find out if it was a fluke or not. But here is why I don't think it was a fluke. Okay. And all that was just a backstory for people who don't necessarily know what's going on. That arrives me at today. So I broke 100. I guess I'll finish it a little bit. So I was around 110, something like that, but I had been playing a lot, feeling a lot more comfortable. I shot 110 round on camera. And I kind of think of those when I have a camera crew there with me, I'm just playing by myself. I kind of think of those as my, like, the real scores. Like, I can shoot whatever. Like, today I shot 86, but there's no camera crew there. So I'm going to try to do it next week with a camera crew and see if I can break 90 with the camera crew, because that's real. Pressure's on, you know, all this, every shot's out there for display. There's no, like, you know, adjusting your lie. There's no, you know, those little tiny things that go into kind of fudging a golf score. There's none of that. And I tried to keep on a score, but if you're on camera, you can't even think about it. So I'm shooting about a 110 a couple months ago, probably 2 months ago. And I knew that, hey, if I just eliminate some of these dumb shots, I mean, I'm just these tens, I'm just like 25 putting I'm on the green. I like 7 putt. I can break 100. I just got to go out one time, get the camera crew there, get a tee time, focus in. Don't make dumb mistakes. Just be present for the entire round. I'll break 100. And I did it. I shot a 97 at Park Ridge in Florida. And I told I made a declaration a month out. I said, if I don't break 100 in a month, I'm quitting golf forever. Because I've always thought, if you don't have any type of natural talent or ability to progress, then you're never going to be a pro, and it's a waste of time. I might not quit the game of golf and never play again, but I was going to quit acting like I'm going to be a pro. If I'm not making any progress and I just suck and have no natural talent, I'm out. Like, I got to be real with myself. There has to be some milestones I'm hitting, and I got to be progressing. So I said, you know what? If I don't hit 100 in a month, I'm done. I hit 100. I hit a 97. And then, since then, the next day I go out for my 97. I shoot a 97, broke 100, super pumped about it. Next day, next morning, go out, tee time. I'm through 9 holes and I have a 44 on my scorecard. I'm on pace to break 90. And I made the mistake that I'll never make again. I texted one of my best friends and I told him, I'm about to break 90. I'm on pace to break 90. On the 10th hole, I think I got a 7. And I think on the 11th hole, I think I got an 11. And I didn't even break 100 that day. So I've kind of known that if I really can just, if I can just dial it in, I could really be around 90. But I've known that for a long time. That was probably 6 weeks ago. But I haven't been able to put it together. I haven't been able to consistently make contact with the ball. I still have a lot of mishits topping the ball, a lot of out of bounds drives, a lot of just dumb stuff. And, but I've known it's been right there. It's been right there. So I'm coming to Asheville. Okay. And this puts us now, this is basically how the 86 happened. I'm coming to Asheville, North Carolina. And I'm on a flight I'm taking Fort Lauderdale to Asheville. It's an hour and a half flight. I download a podcast, okay? Tim Dillon's new show. He's right now the funniest podcast to me, Tim Dillon Show. I listen to the podcast. It's 1 hour and 3 minutes. The flight's 1.5 hours. I downloaded the podcast in advance. I didn't buy Wi-Fi on the flight. Too short. If the flight's over 2 hours, I'll buy Wi-Fi. If it's 1.5 hours, I can get through. I listen to the podcast. Now it's over. I have 20 minutes. What do I do? What do you do when you're in that situation? Of course, obviously, you go to your Rolodex on your camera and you start looking through all your memories and remembering things you had forgot about via picture via pretty much the only thing you can do on your camera, on your phone, when you don't have Wi-Fi. So I'm starting to go through some of my pictures and stuff, and almost all of my thing is just golf swings, like having people film me or whatever, and just seeing what my golf swing looks. Always looks terrible. I always feel better than it looks. And so I'm watching all my swings. And my main problem from a visual standpoint, if you're looking at my swing, is, you know, however it translates to how I'm hitting the ball is whatever. It's maybe a same issue, but separate, is I release the club way too early. I have no lag. I don't generate any lag in my swing. I release my club as it's coming down. And so basically I'm like kind of scooping the ball instead of really hitting down on it and compressing the ball. And it really affects my distance. And it's frustrating for me because I've had, you know, I've went in and I've had my distances like kind of evaluated or documented on TrackMan. I did it with Colin at a 5-iron. And that's another thing good about 5-iron, by the way, is you can do this kind of stuff. They have all the equipment. But to see what my distances were when I was first playing, literally first playing golf with my different clubs. So I know, okay, I'm a 135 out. What do I use? And at that time, my distances were really further than they are now. Now that I've been playing and I'm a lot better. And so I'm like, been frustrated by that. And it's like, my distances also aren't good. It's like, I've been hitting like my pitching wedge, like 125, and I can hit a driver. If I go out and I just try to pipe my driver, I can hit it 300 plus. If I'm just like, all right, I'm going to pipe this one. I get my hips through, I'll hit it 300 plus. So it's not like the power's not there. It's just like, haven't been able to find it or utilize it. And I think a lot of it has been coming from me releasing my clubs so early in my downswing. So I'm watching, I'm on the plane, I'm looking at all my videos, and I'm noticed that this little thing about my swing, about how when I go back in my backswing, I have a good path in my backswing, but I'm kind of like bringing my left arm, which is my arm that's, I'm right-handed, so that my arm that's closest to the hole, the one that you hold straight, I'm bringing it right across my chest, really like flat, you know, like really like almost when it comes back, it's almost on, it's under my other shoulder. And then I'm watching how that really, that's just my swing. And it kind of looks, my backswing kind of looked fine. But then I was looking at a bunch of swings and I saw one swing I had in my phone where I had picked my arm up higher at my left arm. And it, when I was in my backswing, it kind of went over my shoulders, more of at a 45 degree angle, I guess, closer to a 45 degree angle than just flat, which is what my normal swing was. And the swing itself looked much more, I was able to get down on the ball and really, my club didn't release as early and I was able to kind of compress the ball and it was a good shot. So I was like, man, I wonder if I'm just, part of the reason why I cannot get any lag is because I'm putting my arm directly across my body and I can't, from that position, once I'm at the top of my swing, I can't throw down at the ball. I really have to kind of scoop the ball or kind of almost like a hockey shot the ball. Slapstick the ball, whatever they call it. I don't know hockey. Let me get a drink of water really fast. Let me interrupt this podcast to let you know about Truly Seltzer. If you never heard of it, it's like alcohol that is bubbly and it has few amounts of calories and things that will make you fatso and a lot of the things that will make you feel great. It has 16 different flavors and if you're on the course, you're at the bar, you're at the beach, or you're just relaxing at home, this would be a good thing to put inside your mouth and body. Truly is truly the best. When I was at the Hooters convention, Joey Chestnut, the hot dog eater, chugged about three of these things, and he was feeling great, I could tell. Truly Seltzer, 16 refreshing styles. My personal favorite is the Fruit Punch, showed to me by Commissioner Riggs at the Barstool Classic. That's the best one, in my opinion. We're all entitled to our own. Truly Seltzer, drink it or be an idiot. So I'm in Ashland. I had a tea time with my Uncle Bobby today. And I said, all right, my one goal is I'm going to just try to bring up my arm, my left arm in the backswing. I'm going to bring up a little bit of a higher angle. That was my one kind of swing thought today. And just see how it goes. And I was planning on getting out there early and get on the range and trying to see what that looked like. But I didn't get there in time, of course. So I'm going out, and I just got to go right to the first tee. I hate doing that, but I end up doing that more times than not. Trying to go through my little warm-up that Dan Hellman taught me. He's been on the podcast before. If you've want to listen to that episode, it was a great episode. He's my trainer down there in Florida. And trying to do this really fast. My Uncle Bobby had already teed off. And also, does everyone have Uncle Bobby? Because I feel like a lot of people have uncles named Bobby. Report back on that. But, and I play with him all the time when I'm in Nashville. And I take my first swing. It's I'm playing Broadmoor. If you're familiar with the course in Nashville, it's a public course. It's the only one I've actually ever played in Nashville. I'm really excited. I'm playing the Grove Park this Friday for a fundraiser for my high school football team. And I'm really pumped about it. I've only played Broadmoor in Nashville. I've never played any other courses. And Broadmoor is just the closest to my house. So I am I'm on the first tee box. It's a par four. It's about 200 yards straight, and then it's not a dog leg. It's like literally a right degree angle to the left. It's a right angle to the left, and then it's probably another 150 yards from there to the green. I take my four iron because that's the smallest, that's the longest iron I carry in my bag, and I take a smack at it, and I just do that one thing, and I just absolutely peered the ball. And I was not warm. It didn't go super far, you know, but it went probably a good 200 yards, and I didn't take a hard swing. And also, I play with blades. That's another thing you need to understand. So when I first started, Como told me, if you're really serious, you really want to be a pro, eventually you're going to have to go to blades because that's what pros play with. And you're honestly better off just starting with them. That way you don't have any false sense of security with your contact. If you're going to be a pro, you have to make perfect, pure contact every time. And blades, you will know. Okay. Cause if you mishit it, it's like a baseball. I would compare it to like when you're a baseball player and you kind of hit it on the lower end of the bat and you get a little bit of a stinger in your hands. It's kind of almost a similar feeling. It doesn't hurt like that does, but if you hit a blade and it doesn't, if you don't hit a pure, first of all, it's not going to go where you want it to, but also it's just kind of feels bad. He's like, you just need to get that feel now of what it feels like to hit the ball perfect. And so since I've started playing golf, I've been playing with blades. I've never played with metal, whatever they're called, cavity backs one time. I think one time I had to rent clubs and I played with cavity backs. I've always played with blades. So I'm playing with blades and I peered the ball. In the first swing, I was like, wow, that felt pretty good. This, I might be on to something here. Next shot, about 150 out, 7 iron, peared it again. And when you have the blade, the disadvantage is if you don't hit it perfect, it's not going to go where you want it to, and it's going to feel terrible. But if you do hit it perfect with a blade, like, it feels like it's the best feeling of all time. It feels like baseball, like you hit it in a sweet spot and it just doesn't even feel like you even made contact with anything and it's a 500-foot home run. That's the feeling with blades. If you hit it pure, peared it again, right on the green. Two putt, starting off with a par. Or wait, what did I start off? Okay, I started off with a bogey, so I must have three putted. But I think I made some... I was even in that mindset. I was like, bogey golf gets me to, I have my scorecard in front of me. So I three putted the first one and I'm thinking bogey golf. If I play bogey golf today, I will be at 90. Never broken 90. That is fine. I was like pumped. And then I just kept moving forward. Second hole, bogey. Third hole, par. I said, okay. What are we on to here? The swing is working amazing. I'm not topping anything. And I'm hitting the ball with a flight path that looks like golf. A lot of times in the past, you know, even if my score, even if it's a bogey, you know, I got there by, I topped the ball and I hit it really hard and it was just worm burning across the ground and it went, you know, straight and far, but it was a stupid shot. Or, you know, I hit a huge hooking shot that barely stays in bounds. But, you know, these shots look like golf shots. They look like what you see on TV. I'm not saying that they look like I'm a professional, but they look like the ball went off the club at an angle that looked like it should have. It stayed high in the air and would have a little draw or fade to it or come down straight. I mean, they were going exactly straight. In fact, I kind of messed up on, I got my first double bogey on 4. And the reason I got a double bogey is because this is the first par 5 at this course. So I didn't even want to pull my driver. I was like, I'm not pulling my driver today. This little swing change is working perfectly. If I pull my driver, I don't know if it's going to work with my driver, and I'm not trying to mess this up. At this time, I'm on pace to shoot my 90. So I take out my hybrid, TaylorMade, by the way. Shout out TaylorMade. I pull my hybrid, and I usually hit my hybrid very well, but it has a huge, I don't know what it's called, a hook or a slice. Whenever it goes to the left, like when it goes, mine goes straight. And then at the end of it just goes huge to the left. Like not like subtle, like huge, like across the entire course. It can go across, go from the right side of the fairway to the left side of the fairway easily. So I just aimed right down the right side of the course on this, off the tee box. Right, the woods is on the right. I'm aiming right next to the woods because I know it's going to make this huge turn at the end. I use the same swing, a little bit higher, pipe, absolutely pipe my hybrid dead straight. More distance than I'm used to. I don't know, 230 plus. I don't know exactly how far I went. Dead straight. And it just goes flies into the woods. So I got a double bogey because I had to take a drop, and I mean, not a drop. I had to hit twice off the tee box. So I got a penalty stroke. So I was just like that. I was the only mistake through that that point. And I'm trying to think how I got a couple other. I want to say I got another double bogey. I got two double bogeys on the front, and the rest were bogeys. And they had the one par. I ended up with a 46 on the front. It was a par 36. I ended up with a 46, so I was 10 over. But really, I didn't make, not making any really big mistakes. I was a couple three putts. I got saved on one. I had a, this is actually the same hole. Later in that same hole, I had a chip off the fringe that went in. So that kind of saved my double bogey. It could have been worse. But I was like, man, I'm playing really good golf. I'm through half, and with a 46, I did the math, I could have a 43 on the back. I had to play a little bit better because there's another 36 on the back, par 72 total, to break 90. I come out on the back, and I shoot par on 10, par on 11, par on 12. Then I go, my worst hole of the day, double bogey on 13 because we had this group in front of us who was playing so slow. And I'm living in South Florida now where there's a lot of retired people and a community of a lot of retirees. So I realized once you get to that age, you know, things start moving slower. No fault to you. I hope to be there one day. I hope to be creepy crawling around the course, hunched over, barely able to walk, still swinging my stick. I hope to be there. You're living a life. Like, I'm no hate whatsoever, but I'm only playing with Uncle Bobby. There's no other people with us. We got twosome. They have a threesome and they're retired. Let's call them retired. Okay. They're taking a long time. They let us play through them, but it was after. So they teed off and then we teed off. And then like they're just sitting there waiting for us to hit. So I go up there. I'm just rushing it. And I I hit it out of bounds and I had to take a penalty stroke. That was my only bad hole on the back. That was a double. I ended up with the next hole, which was 14, I go bogey. 15, I go par. 16, I go birdie. 17, I go bogey. And then on 18, I go with a 6, which was a bogey. On 18, honestly, I also, I was like, I was ahead of 80. Okay. I ended up shooting a 40 on the back. It was a 36 par. I shot a 40 on the back. And on 8, and I'm going into 18. I know I'm going to break 90. I have 80 strokes going in. I haven't calculated everything. So I had 80 strokes. I was plus 13 going into the 18th hole. I knew that I could take some, freaking chances, I guess. I could get a freaking 9 and still break 90, which is my only goal. So I pulled out my driver for the first time today. I was like, I'm going to see if I can pipe this as a par 5. I was like, I'm going to try to absolutely drill this ball, knock into the next stratosphere and get like an eagle and walk out of here with an 83. And I hit my driver so bad. It went like 30 yards into the rough in front of the tee box. And I had to basically hit from like the ladies' tees for my second shot. And so, I ended up still playing the rest of the hole really well. If I wouldn't have pulled my driver, I would have had an even lower score than 86. But I still got a bogey. Putting was on fire all day. And yeah, 86, par 72, Broadmoor Golf Course, plus 14. And broke 90 with freaking style. And I had my Uncle Bobby sign my scorecard as proof. But I know. All right, so I did it. But I know there's people out there who probably don't believe it or they think it's a fluke. Also, I'm at the stage right now where I also am like in the could be a fluke category. I want to be mentally tough. I want to believe in myself, but I know enough about golf to know that some days are different than others. And based on the fact that my other lowest round was a 95, I'm not convinced that I've cured my golfing illnesses. I will go back out tomorrow or today when you listen to this, and I will see if this swing change still works. Because I'm like, I want to do it right now, but I'm like, all right, just freaking take the night off. Let's get back at it tomorrow and let's try to ingrain this into your memory. I'm also super scared right now to see a video of it because I didn't take any videos today of the swing. So I don't want to see a video of it and it looks disgusting or there's something like obviously really wrong with it that's going to have to be corrected even though it's working. Because although I love the low scores with my ultimate goal being that I wanted to be like super low scores, like scratch and lower, I can't in good conscience use a faulty technique just because it's giving me temporary, a couple good shots. I have to make sure that I'm putting myself in a position where I'm not capping my potential. And I think some of these techniques you can use are like kind of band-aids for your swing. Although they may work, they cap your potential because you can do them to put the ball, 150 yards, but whenever you need to hit that ball 175 yards to be competitive, you can't do it with the band-aid. So I'm really nervous to see a video of this swing to see if there's something wrong with it. It feels great. And also I want to see if it still works. The only other things I can think about, and I'm pumped beyond belief. 86 is so pretty to me. Anything in the 80s is pretty. Literally like 89. If I go back out, shoot an 89, beautiful. I'm going to try to film this next week. The pressure is going to be on. I should say this too. I think this counts. I think this is important. I talked about this on the podcast last week. I'm trying to do a little bit of drying out this August. I'm trying to get back on my grind, get ready for the fall because the fall is my ultimate season where I really have to grind dick to bone. So, I'm trying to like not go into it tired and hungover and you know, it's a summer still, but trying to really kind of get my mind wrapped around what I'm going to do, make some plans. So I haven't had even a sip of alcohol since the end of last month. So what is it, the 10th? So 10 days sober. That sounds like I'm like an alcoholic, but you know, I will say, like, it's not often I go 10 days without a beer, and it is making a difference. Like, I can tell in my brain that my brain is loves not having beers. Quick interruption here. Let me tell you about what shoes I wore whenever I was able to pull off this amazing feat. That's amazing even to me that I am hoping that's real. You know, I'm going to find out if this is really real next time I play, if I'm really even this good. And if it is real, I did it in these shoes. Either way, I did it in these shoes. They're called G4s. I wore the gray ones. I have multiple pairs. I feel good about all the pairs I have. I wore the gray ones that feel like just tennis shoes, and they're my favorite ones to wear. I have the same exact in white. G4 is a golf brand that is kind of tailored to guys who want to look awesome and feel great. I'm going to give you a deal today. 10% off your first order. Now, this stuff, if you're going to buy shoes, sure, golf stuff can get, you know, it can get up there. So 10%, you're talking about saving some major dollars. G4GFORE.com/strokes, STROKES, G4.com/strokes, you get 10% off your first order. And, you know, if you're buying shoes, that starts to matter. I think I wore the MG4 Plus. Not positive. I think I did. Either way, I'm sure that's a great shoe. All the shoes I have from G4, I love, and they all look great. Actually, you're going to hit them up. If you're listening to this G4, I want more. But, you know, don't we always want more? That's how I feel. Grass is always greener and more is always better. That's what you think. And sometimes it's not true. I do want more G4s, fully waterproof, cushiony foam, external heel cup. So just get 10% off. Also makes us look good here at 51 Strokes, makes us look like we're pushing, you know, people to them. You know, they're sponsoring us, we're sponsoring them. It's a give relationship. That's what we want. So G4.com/strokes, 10% off your first order. Back to the show. My body also loves not having beers, but whoever it is, like, you know, they say the body, mind, body, soul, whatever, something in there, like something inside of my physical being does love drinking beers, but it's not my mind because my mind is thriving with no beers, and it's not my body because my body is thriving with no beers. So maybe this is the best argument for God of all time. The best argument for spirituality of all time, that I love drinking beers, but my mind and body both obviously hate it because I'm feeling fantastic right now. I should say that. So 10 days sober or 10 days without drinking. It's 10 days sober sounds like I'm alcoholic. 10 days without drinking did play a factor. I felt really good out there. I've just felt the best version of myself. Also, this is going to sound like the ultimate cornball thing to say, but I watched a documentary on the mushroom documentary, the fungi documentary with Paul Stamets that's on Netflix right now, like Fantastical Fungi, whatever it's called. And I had listened to him on Joe Rogan a couple of times, so I was familiar with him and the whole mushroom thing. But during this documentary, they kind of drop a couple little tidbits about how much there's certain mushrooms that can really help your brain. And so, you know me, I had to go throw down a little Amazon order. I got these mushrooms. They're called lion's mane. Listen, I know how this sounds. I get it. But I'm entitled to be able to make any Amazon purchase that I want on a whim. And that's what I did. I took advantage of that right. I got the lion's mane. Been taking it for 10 days. I don't know if it's me not drinking or the lion's mane. Maybe it's both. I feel pretty good. My body, brain, I feel pretty put together solid right now. So I just want to be completely transparent. These are the changes I've made. Use them as you wish. If you want to shoot an 86 or you want to drop 9 strokes off your best all-time score, I tell you, I did 3 things. 10 days without drinking, lion's mane, and I put my backswing a little bit higher. Those are the only changes I made. Now, if I can duplicate this or not is a whole different story. If you don't hear back, that means I didn't do it. Because if you hear back, that means, all right, I did it. If I tweet out, all right, shot another 80s, then I'll tweet that. I might not tweet if I go back hundreds. I might keep that to myself. So if you just radio silence, assume the worst. So yeah, next up's the top. Been saying that. Actually ordered a moleskin journal for the fall because I keep all my notes and ideas in a journal and I haven't had one for a while. So I ordered one because I like them very specific. I got a personalized one. It says next stop the top because that's the next stop for us. I tweeted out, I want to shoot a 79 the morning in Arizona, the morning of the Arizona Bowl. I want to wake up that morning, 7:30 tee time, early tee time. I don't even know if I'm going to, the type of tee time where you know you want to warm up, but you're not even going to be able to wake up early enough to possibly warm up. I want to go out there and I'm going to shoot a 79 that morning. It looks a lot more probable now than it ever did. Also, it should be noted as well. When I first started this journey, I had Chris Como, the golf coach, my golf coach, who I haven't got a lot of lessons from, but hopefully will. I had him on my podcast and I said, is it possible for me to be a scratch golfer in 1 year? He said, no. I said, okay, well, that's my goal. He's like, okay, well, it's not possible. I said, okay, what could I, he said, nothing's impossible, but that's not possible. So, okay, what could I do? What timeline would I have to be a scratch golfer for you to say, hey, this kid has a legitimate chance of becoming a professional one day? Like, he's naturally talented enough. He's shown enough hard work, dedication, drive, practice, whatever. He has a talent threshold to one day actually be pro. This dream is possible. He said, if you're scratch 72 in 2 years, you have a chance. I start my journey. It's hard to say this January because I did do a lot of practice putting. So if you want to give me on a technicality, it's fair. I did a lot of putting in the fall in, while I was hurt and during football season, I was bringing my putter with me everywhere. I was putting as much as I could. So you can get me on that if you want. I kind of consider the start of this journey January when I was able to swing, really get out there. Right now we're 8 months in. We have the 86 on the books. I believe by the end of the year, that will be the Barstool Bowl, the Arizona Bowl. We're going to be in the 70s that morning. I believe that to be the case. That's the goal. We're going to keep practicing, speak that. I mean, it's crazy, but there were strokes I left out there today, you know, that it would have been, I would have had to play basically the, you know, every single one of those little putts would have had to fall and I would have had to not go out of bounds, but I was aimed out of bounds, thought I was going to hook out, didn't. If I would have known all that, you know, 79, I mean, this is the hard thing about golf. It's so easy to do this and so stupid because it's just not how it works, but it's there. Like it was there for the taking. I didn't take it. It was there for the taking today. If I can get my driver in the mix, make some of these approach shots shorter. I don't know. I just think it's possible. I think 70s are possible December 31st. But we have a long, long road to go. So anyways, that's the 86. That's the breaking 90. Very big moment. I feel much better about breaking 90 than I felt about breaking 100. Breaking 100, I knew I could do. I just had to focus. This honestly came out of the freaking blue. Like I didn't see this coming. I thought I was going to go out there and try to do a swing change. I thought it might be a rough round because, you know, you try to make these little tweaks, even if they're the right thing to do, it's not always helpful. Also, I got to give a shout out to Chris Verna back home in South Florida. Chris Verna is a guy that I want to get on the podcast. He's a physical, I don't know if a physical therapist is the right word, but he's a hips and shoulder specialist. This would be actually a good guest for the podcast. I need to get him on, but I have a little bit of issues in my hips. Just everyone does. No one's completely perfectly like symmetrical and aligned in their pelvis and hips. But I've been having a little bit of issue, and he's been working with me for a long time, and I think that we are starting to make some really good progress, and I think that's helped me too. I think Chris Verna's helped me too. I think Chris Como's helped me. I think Dan Hellman's helped me. I think that Dave Portnoy's helped me by allowing me to do this in practice. And I think a lot of people have been very helpful. So shout out to them. Shout out to you guys for listening and for supporting. I'm actually super pumped. Like, I look at golf as it's something in my life that's like just really, it's like pure and good. And, you know, every time I go out, I just have like, it's great. Like, I just have a great time. It's fun. It's good to be around people. It's good to be outside. It feels healthy. It feels beneficial to my life. And I'm love that I get to do it for a job. I would be doing it even if it wasn't. That's how much I love it and how important I think it is for me. And so to make like actual progress and breakthroughs when sometimes I do go through like long times where I'm playing and not getting any better. Also, like, I don't know, I'm kind of an idiot. Like, I don't know why I expect to get so much better at not taking lessons, but you play so much, you're like, I'm gonna figure this out. And to actually figure something out or to really get like a breakthrough feels freaking amazing. Feels phenomenal. And Max Homa, shout out to Max Homa, another one who's been super supportive. He told me, he's like, dude, golf's so weird because you're not going to go out there and work, and then you're not going to lose, you know, a stroke every week. Or it's not like a linear just trudging uphill. You're going to go out, and then you're going to have a breakthrough, and you're going to drop 10 strokes. And that's exactly, I mean, Max Homa said that. That's exactly what happened. I hope this breakthrough sticks around. But it was a breakthrough. I had a freaking breakthrough. So shout out to Max. And yeah, shout out to all you guys. I really appreciate it. And we are on to, I'll let you know if I do report back that this swing's still intact, we're cooking with gas. If you don't hear from me and I like start talking about cryptos or something again, I might still be talking about cryptos, but if I just completely stop talking about golf, that means that this was all a fluke. But still, it happened. They can't take away from me that it happened. I have my Uncle Bobby sign my scorecard as a witness. So I can't take that away from me. But let's just hope it locks in. This is 51 Strokes. And we are on our way to the top. Actually, next stop's the top.